Hey, John. Hey, Laurel.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah, I got some bad news for you.
Oh, what?
Well, you know how we're journalists and we cover politics and we love conflict. We love it when political candidates fight.
Uh-huh. Yeah, naturally. Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen this year, man.
What?
Couple of sheriffs come to town. They're going to clean things up.
What do you mean?
Well, Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson has said he's going to hold the Republican candidates for U.S. Senate to a unity pledge. And Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan has said that when it comes to the Democratic primary for governor, he's going to serve as a peacekeeper.
Yeah, but are they doing that because they want to do that? Or are they doing that because they have to?
Yeah, and are they actually keeping the peace?
Well, we should talk about that. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm Sean Johnson.
I'm John K. Wilson.
And I'm Laurel White.
Let's talk about self-appointed political peacekeepers.
And that, of course, was the artist formerly known as Cat Stevens, now known as Yusuf Islam, who is not a cat but a man, with his song Peace Train, which serves as an adequate enough metaphor for our conversation about political peacemakers. So why are we talking about Mark Pocan and Ron Johnson now, this week? What peace are they trying to keep?
Well, they are. So Pocan is the one who gave us this peace idea. Thank you, Congressman Pocan.
He gave us this piece of news?
Yes, when he called himself a peacemaker earlier this week. He says he's not going to endorse, or it's not his plan to endorse right now in the Democratic primary for governor, in which there are many, many candidates. Nine that we've been talking about a lot on this podcast. Pocan is saying that he's really better off, letting you know that I'll be good candidates, and he's really better off being a peacemaker, where if somebody says something about a fellow Democrat that he thinks is kind of, that Pocan thinks is out of bounds, he might step in on, what do you say, step in on Twitter or something,
yeah,
and call him out.
I think he said he might pop up on Twitter occasionally.
Yeah.
Just be like, excuse me, that's out of bounds.
Twitter yeah. needs more of those people.
Yeah. Well, Twitter is known for keeping the peace,
right? Yeah.
It's just a peaceful environment, a great place to be, very tranquil. And then Johnson actually had anointed himself. Well, we shouldn't say self-anointed necessarily with Johnson, because he put out a release with the state Republican Party a few months ago, calling on Kevin Nicholson and Leah Vukmir to sign this unity pledge, which is a more formal way of saying the same thing, that, you know, you're not going to get too nasty. Respect each other.
Do we have that here somewhere in your stack of stuff?
We
in
do.
Your stack of papers?
I have so many papers.
It's going to take like roughly a year for Sean to find this unity pledge. So while he's like searching for it, I think the main gist of the unity pledge that's a little bit different than just being nice to each other is that you say that you will endorse, or that you will support the eventual nominee. So whoever wins the primary, you know, if that's your opponent, that you will officially support them. That's part of the unity pledge, right, Sean?
Yeah. In January of this year, Johnson called on the committees to commit themselves, the campaigns to commit themselves to a respectful pursuit of the endorsement of grassroots conservatives at state convention and the Republican nomination. The pledge.
See, the one I was looking for, yeah, was the copy of the actual pledge that you showed me, because it says, like, I blank.
Yes, there are two candidates, but they needed to create a fill-in form for
they
them.
They should have just had it, like, circle one. Like, I, Kevin,
pick one.
Leah, circle.
Oh, hold on, I need a new form. You know, I like this line in the pledge, though. I further pledge that I will conduct my campaign in a manner that is respectful of my fellow Republican candidates, and we'll focus on achieving victory in November. So don't go out there and pick on each other, because you know the real enemy, according to this pledge, is Tammy Baldwin, the Democrat who is holding the U.S. Senate right now. So save your fire, guys. Don't pick on each other. And I'm Ron Johnson. Oops.
And your phone just falls on the floor every single podcast now.
It should be just like a feature of the podcast. We get some music for like, and Sean's phone just fell to the floor.
Yeah, I just like perilously perched that thing, or else I have a lot of hand gestures too. Also, I think we should mention here, since you guys can't see this, we're recording in the Capitol Bureau today, and we have a makeshift mic stand on top of a wastebasket and approximately 30 blue books serving as a table. And we think it's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Way to make a picture in the mind.
Yeah. Well, That's been great. That's been great.
All right. So, I mean, I guess sort of the... it was Mark Hokan that made the news that we're talking about this week, but I think this one of the central questions we're asking about here is whether or not these elected officials really want to serve as peacemakers, if they're saying, you know, hey guys, really, like, calm down, don't fight amongst yourselves, or if part of it is that at this point in the race, at least, they don't feel comfortable coming out and backing one of these candidates over the other.
So let's take them one by one. You know, what is the situation that Hokan made the news this week? What situation does he find himself in as he decides whether or not to endorse, because he could, or whether to stay off to the side and play referee, sheriff, peacemaker, you name it?
Well, there's still 9 people and maybe growing. So, like, there are, you know... If he picks, I guess he wouldn't be endorsing necessarily, but even if he starts like scolding one of the fellow candidates, like, what if he's scolding the wrong person who ends up becoming the nominee? Things are pretty wide open at this point.
I think that's the thing. If there was one standout person that the party knew, okay, we're having a primary sort of in name only, but we know that the eventual nominee is going to be so-and-so, then maybe Hokan steps in, endorses that person.
I think that's interesting, though, because isn't sort of the purpose of an endorsement to help people who support Mark Hokan, who know that they like him, kind of help them make a choice in this really large Democratic field? They might not know those candidates as well, but then they go with whoever Mark Hokan says is somebody that he likes. That's why endorsements exist. If the endorsements are just going to come from the party's already chosen this person, there's no point.
It's like this is the moment when people need endorsements the most.
A little
right?
guidance.
Like,
yeah.
Oh gosh, I don't know. Who are all these folks? Who do I choose? Mark Hokan, I know you. Who do you like?
I everybody.
I'm just a peacemaker.
But I mean, yeah. I guess like Mark Hokan himself is a politician, and so he has his, you know, eventual election to worry about too. And so he probably doesn't want to be burning any bridges.
I don't think Mark Hokan's worried about his election so much, but here's the situation he could find himself in. Okay, let's say that he really likes, we'll just throw it out there that he really likes Paul Soglin, because mm-hmm. I don't believe he does. I believe Mark Hokan was on the Mayor Dave side of the Paul Soglin, Mayor Dave wars of mm-hmm. the 2000s. But we'll say throw it out there as a hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes out and endorses him. And, you know, he loses. And, like, Tony Evers is the nominee. Well, then Tony Evers looks like he doesn't have the whole party behind him. You know, like, that there is disarray in the party. Because, look, even Hokan, it wasn't his first choice. And it just looks like... It's like they want to minimize the conflict. They don't want to have endorsements because, you know, from somebody like Hokan, because, you know, they want everybody, once whoever wins in August, they want them to be able to pivot quickly and go to November, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you're right. Like, this is the exact, it's a low risk move by Hokan. People could use that endorsement, that nudge, but when the front runner in the race is hard to pick out, who's Hokan to choose, really?
And have there been examples in this race specifically where, like, there has been some Democrat on Democrat whacking that, like, Hokan could potentially step in and wag his finger at and say, "Stop it, y'all"?
So here's the fun thing about this peacekeeper business is that the political parties are watching this pretty closely, and We get more press releases, I feel like, from Democrats highlighting the disarray, they call it, in the Republican primary, or from Republicans calling out the conflict in the Democratic primary. Like, the parties are there to call out.
So they're like the anti-peacemakers.
Exactly. They're like,
they're
look,
the agents of chaos here.
Yeah. I mean, the state Republican Party put something out this week. See, we read these things. Yesterday, Congressman Mark Hokan decided to declare himself keeper of the peace in the Democrat primary for governor. But just how good of a job is Hokan doing? And then it kind of ticks off a list of, like, when Paul Soglin targeted Tony Evers, saying that Evers had already peaked. And when You know, Mike McCabe and Malin Mitchell have argued over who's really a Democrat. Kathleen Vinehout and Kelda Royes traded barbs on Cap City Sunday over gun control and abortion. So they're focused on that conflict and they're like, poke in, come on, you're not really stepping in. Look at this, it's a mess over there. And then the other side of that is that Democrats are putting out releases of their own. Hold on a moment while I go to the paper pile. I would normally have these in front of me, but on our stack of blue books in our makeshift studio today, there's just not room. Yeah, like the Democratic Party puts out a running tally of since January, since the Unity Pledge came out, they're like January 4th, 22nd, March 6th, March 14th, March 26th, March 29th. All these instances where Kevin Nicholson and Leah Vukmir have gone after each other in sometimes subtle, sometimes not so subtle ways where there has been some serious conflict between them. And the Democratic Party is there to point it out. You know, that is what the parties are doing right now, is to paint a picture of a lack of unity.
And so is we've talked about Pocan, is Ron Johnson's calculation pretty similar in terms of why he, you know, pushed this unity pledge and hasn't stepped in to really endorse either one of the candidates for the person who would be, you know, if they beat Tammy Baldwin, who would be his direct colleague in the U.S. Senate?
I mean, that just what you said makes it very different for him, because this is a person that he's going to have to work with directly. It's not like Mark Pocan is going to day-to-day work with a Democratic governor if that's who wins the race. But it would be incredibly awkward, I think, for Ron Johnson if, say, he endorses Leah Vukmir and Kevin Nicholson wins, and then they're in the Senate together for the next X number of years. And I wouldn't want to sit at that lunch table necessarily.
And I think Johnson's also in a different boat because of the way that the Republican Party officially supports, endorses candidates. So at the party nominating convention, which Laura will have the pleasure of witnessing soon, they take...
It's a week from today. I have a countdown going.
Delegates show up and they actually vote for who the party is going to endorse. And then, like, whichever candidate gets that endorsement... That's a huge feather in their cap. And they actually have a cap and a giant feather. It says endorse on it. No, that's not what happens.
They should do that,
guys.
Though.
Okay, it would be pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Psych! I'd wear that hat.
I'm picturing kind of like a Robin Hood hat.
Yeah. So Ron Johnson knows the importance of this, because this is what launched his political career, basically, in 2010. He kind of came out of nowhere and won the party endorsement for U.S. Senate at a time when it was still contested, and then he was the candidate from that point forward. You know, that's going to happen again, and I think because Leah Vukmir has been involved in Republican politics for so long, and, you know, in these conventions, too, and knows people, and they know her... It's a pretty good chance that she could win that nomination. So it, I imagine when Nicholson had to sign this pledge, and he kind of had to, he knew that, and he knew what he was getting into. Mm-hmm. But it's a different boat over there, because essentially, Ron Johnson is asking Kevin Nicholson to honor this vote that's going to happen in May. At the same time, he's asking them both to play nice.
Mm-hmm.
So. One of you asked, how's this going in that side?
So how's this going?
Well, this is funny because, like, the Nicholson and Vukmir primary is getting pretty heated now. They had a debate, which was...
The debate itself was very tame from what I heard, you know, like the meat of the debate. But then it was closing statements that got a little fiery. And then since then, there's been a lot of fallout and conflict in response to those closing statements.
Chuck Quirnbach covered this debate for WPR, so I'm going through some of the quotes here. And Leah Vukmir says of Kevin Nicholson, "We know more about Kevin's track record as a Democrat than we do about his track record as a Republican." Nicholson shoots back, "My track record? I would look to the battlefields of Iraq and Afghanistan. I know that doesn't mean much to certain politicians. I know that darn well." And Vukmir says, "That was a very, very low blow to say that I don't respect you, and I want to make sure everyone in this room knows that I respect your service." And now it's kind of spiraled from there to where Nicholson is out there saying that he doesn't respect the cognitive ability of Democrat of veterans who support Democrats. And all this is coming back to Ron Johnson, When Ron Johnson was asked whether Nicholson should apologize, Johnson said, "I'll let the voters make their own judgment." He's not really keeping the peace here.
He actually said, there are some fouls being committed, but I'm going to let the players play the game or something like that.
Did he?
I liked that analogy. Yeah,
that's pretty good. Like a rough game where you know, the refs just let them play.
Right, yeah.
So drawing on your distinguished knowledge of the history of Wisconsin politics, Sean Johnson, old man Sean Johnson, do you have examples of people... of situations where a referee and or peacemaker, sheriff hasn't stepped in to block this stuff?
I have one because I've heard old man Sean Johnson talk about it.
Ooh, let's hear it.
So the Republican primary that had Tommy Thompson in it.
Oh, yeah.
That was a really bruising primary where there was a lot of back and forth. And then so that was when Republicans were having a primary for who was going to run against Tammy Baldwin for Senate back when she won. And a lot of people say that because that primary was so rough, that's why the eventual nominee, Tommy Thompson, didn't beat Baldwin because he had been punched around so much.
And that's why you have like Johnson and the Republican Party stepping in this time. I'm glad you brought that up. That's a good point. Because
who was he running against in the primary?
Tommy Thompson was running. It was a four-way primary and it was pretty brutal. It was Tommy Thompson, Eric Hovde, who by the way is not running in this year's Senate race, Jeff Fitzgerald, former assembly speaker, now lobbyist, and Mark Newman, former congressman.
And Mark Newman had a lot of support, right?
Mark Newman came in third in that race, yeah, but
he was getting a lot of like establishment something.
I would actually use Mark Newman in a different example.
I was going to say, speaking of Mark Newman, not that we've discussed this beforehand or anything.
So, John, if you had asked, what's an example of a time when peacekeepers did step in? I would actually refer to the 2000.
So I just asked the question wrong, is what you're saying.
It's okay, man. It's all right.
All right.
You actually made a really good point. Yeah, so. Yeah. So I would go back to the 2010 Republican gubernatorial primary, and just to set this up a little bit, it was Scott Walker's turn. You know, he had run briefly in the 2006 Republican primary, dropped out. That always wins a Republican a lot of adoration from the party. You know, he's going to support not that year's nominee, Mark Green. And Scott Walker basically spent the next 4 years laying a foundation to run for governor. He was the guy for Republicans. Nobody told Mark Newman. Mark Newman decides, I'm going to run for governor also as a Republican. And, you know, early on, he had some people who supported him. Like, here's my Mark Newman. My Mark Newman file,
oh,
guys.
Wow.
Good Lord.
Okay.
Here's the book that Mark Newman wrote. It's called Wisconsin Taxpayers First, A Bold Plan to Take Back Wisconsin by Mark Newman. He wrote a book. Here's his property tax cut and like
fun.
Yeah. So Mark Newman was kind of into this stuff. When you write a book about your stuff, you're into it, right?
Yeah,
so
this is a laminated plan for education.
Nobody told Mark Newman, hey, you're not the guy this year. And he decided he was going to run. And he had some backings from somebody named James Clauser, who was very big in the Tommy Thompson administration. But then Mark Newman starts, you know, he's going to lose to Scott Walker unless he kind of ruffles some feathers. And so he starts running more aggressively against Scott Walker. I got another cool printout in here for you guys. This is an ad that ran in Drudge. See, at the top of Drudge, an ad paid for by Mark Newman attacking Scott Walker. Scott Walker voted against concealed carry.
It also calls him Milwaukee Scott Walker.
That's right, Milwaukee Scott Walker. Ooh.
I was just reading the headline on the Drudge Report that looks like it's talking smack about soccer.
I think it is, yeah. There's a lot going on in Drudge. But Newman starts doing this stuff and running an actual spirited primary campaign. And then, you know, because he's probably going to lose, then people start just, oh man, I'm just so deeply offended by what you're doing, Mark Newman. And then the peacekeepers come out of the woodwork when he's not the candidate. When everybody's decided he's not going to win, then you have like Clauser, who had endorsed him, saying, I am aghast at where your campaign is gone. You are violating the Reagan commandment.
The 11th commandment of Ronald Reagan, where thou shalt not talketh bad about fellow Republicans or throweth any of thy shade.
Talketh bad.
Throweth shade.
Throweth of the shade.
Did Ronald Reagan say that? I don't think so.
I believe
Reagan
so.
Reagan was before his time.
Yeah.
And
you just
speaking
throw
of the throweth of being of the shade.
Yeah. So there's an example, I think. When do peacekeepers really step in? When they've decided somebody can't win and there's no downside to attacking them. So eventually Republicans decided they would do that with Mark Newman. And I think you could see Pocan step in the Democratic primary with some of these candidates. Let's say, for example, Mike McCabe starts attacking the other Democrats. And Mike McCabe has said, I'm not going to sign a pledge that says I endorse whichever mm-hmm. candidate comes out of this primary.
I think he's the only Democrat in the field.
He is.
That has said that.
Mm-hmm. I could totally see Pocan stepping in with McCabe and calling him out for something if mm-hmm. he were to go negative.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, you're being too negative. Also, your jeans don't actually fit that well.
A reference to Blue Jeans Nation, Mike McCabe's group that he founded. Governor Blue Jeans. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is what he's come up with. Good reference there, John.
Thanks. Not to be confused with Mr. Green Jeans. Anyway, so what you're saying ultimately is that even though there are some self-appointed peacekeepers in town, there could still be some carnage, and we have yet to see whether or not the peacekeepers will really step in and start keeping that peace.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what we're saying.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it too much yet. Not too much.
Yeah, it's been pretty tame.
So lucky for us, guys. I know directly conflicts what I said in the introduction of this podcast, but I think we are still going to have some conflict to report on in 2018.
All right.
Something to look forward to.
Well, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
If you have friends or family members or colleagues who are just consistently arguing about what podcast is the best, and for everybody's sanity, you feel the need to step in and keep the peace to settle this dispute once and for all, just subscribe to the WPR Politics Podcast on iTunes and tell them to do the same. You can also find it on Google Play and many other podcast apps, and you and your friends and your family and colleagues can also listen to all of our past episodes anytime you all like at wpr.org/politics.